Speaking
well,
of
you ever get to the top of that like class 10 rapid and be like, well, I'm committed now.
Yeah.
Unless you plan on hiking out your 18-foot rap and frame it all. Like, I'm committed now, man.
All right, we're hot. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, brother.
We're really excited tonight. Tonight's a special episode. We're super excited to be joined by Brian Tracy, the co-founder of Sagamore Spirit. How are you, Brian?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Brian. We're really excited. So we have four bottles of your whiskey. So before we jump in to questions and learning more about you, we want to taste one of these whiskeys to begin with. So throughout this episode, we're going to stop periodically, just abruptly, and taste one. So which one do you recommend we start off with?
I like your style. Like, that's the way it should be. Like, let's get a little bit of the oils of conversation in us first, and then we'll go, right? So
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think you guys, if I recall correctly, you have our three core products, our signature, our double oak, our cash strength, and then we have a little something special. So I always like to kind of go up in proof. So if you don't mind, we'll start with our signature rye, which is an 83 proof rye.
Awesome. All right, we got it. So I'm going to pour a sip for each of us here. There you go, Matt.
Thanks for sending this to us, by the way. We're super excited to have it and super excited to taste it.
Yeah, right, so, first time having Sagamore. This is great.
This is it. This is our first time. So, yeah, we're very excited.
Yeah, man. So, you know, what we're trying to do at Sagamore is really kind of bring back that great tradition of distilling in Maryland with the Maryland style rye. So we'll take a sip of this one, and then we'll talk a little bit about maybe what makes this one the taste the way it does. I'd love to hear all your right. guys' thoughts on what you're tasting, what you're experiencing.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Cheers.
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 That's great. I enjoy it. Matt has a big smile on his face right now. He looks very happy. So
yeah, it's a great medium for podcasting because I'm sitting here and thinking and realizing that you can't see my expression, but it's a pleasant expression and we're really excited to try it. So tell us about this one if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. So, you know, Maryland has a rich history. It goes distilling back to the 15, 1600s, really predominantly all rum at the time, but like all things, the government gets involved and they, the British start taxing us and hitting us with tariffs on their molasses and sugars out of the British West Indies. And we had a lot of immigration here in Baltimore from Ireland, Scotland, Germany, all who had still grain based type products. So when we weren't growing tobacco, we were growing rye grain in Maryland. But Maryland style rye was always known as a little bit sweeter. Like the original birthplace of the original American whiskey is rye whiskey. And that all happened between Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was known as the Monongahela style, 100% rye. Well, our product, kind of what makes it unique and different, is that sweetness character that you don't find in a lot of ryes, that approachability. And we distill two mash bills. We distill one that's 95% rye, 5% malted barley, and we'll age that for 4 to 6 years, depending on the product. And then we have another one that's our barely legal rye, right? Like, so to be a rye whiskey, just like a bourbon, you have to be 51% corn in your mash bill or recipe. Well, to be a rye, you have to be at least 51% rye. And this one's 52% rye, 43% corn, 5% malted barley. And we age that 4 to 6 years. And then every product has a blend of those two straight ryes. And then we'll proof it down using the limestone spring water from our farm, Sagamore Farm. And hopefully what you guys noticed is maybe on the nose, you got a little bit of sweetness, but a lot of that rye, classic rye spice, a little bit of mint, clove, nutmeg, cinnamon. And then, but on the palate, like you get this interesting rye spice, but this interesting kind of like roundness, balance, sweetness finish of like almost like a dry, like a citrus orange or a dried apricot, a little bit of vanilla, which isn't really a typical characteristic of always in the rye whiskeys, that approachability, that balance to it that we have. And so hopefully that's kind of what you guys experienced a little bit was like, wow, this is a rye whiskey, but it's it's really nice and easy to drink. And that's kind of what we strive for in our signature rye, our 83 proof rye, but still stands up great in a cocktail.
I would say this is too easy to drink. it has so much flavor. I mean, everything you pointed out, I could taste in spades. Yeah. And the smell is amazing too.
Definitely get the citrus on the smell. Definitely get the nutmeg, definitely get the nutmeg on the smell and the citrus on the finish. And it's really pleasant. Now, we're excited to be tasting this. Josh and I are going to enjoy it as we continue to have the conversation. But Josh and I are from Colorado, and we understand that Southwest Colorado specifically, so very near the Four Corners. And we understand that you spent some time at NAU and Flagstaff and actually were guiding. We'd be really interested to hear how you went from guiding to where you're at now.
Oh, like it's like any journey in life, right? It's like it just there's always a fork in the road somewhere. Real quick too, guys, I mean I love that, like, so the San Juan region, kind of like Montrose,
yeah,
like
we're close to there. Yeah, a little town called Dolores, Colorado.
Run the rivers there.
Oh yeah, Dolores River. Every summer, every spring, yep.
Yeah, the tailwater when you can catch it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, every river around there, really. Yeah, spent a lot of time in Telluride skiing, growing up skiing there every summer.
Man, all right. Yeah, we're going to have to – we will save your audience the bromance of that whole experience. Like, yeah. I'd love to take this offline with you guys and get to go further into that conversation, but – I don't know. My life might not be a typical journey, and I don't know how interesting it is to folks, but when I graduated high school in Maryland, I knew I really wasn't kind of cut out for college at that time. I was 18 years old and not a lot of discipline despite coming out of a military school. And so I moved, I saved everybody the trouble and just said, I'll move out west and I'm not going to go to college. And I bounced around for a while, and I lived in Lake Tahoe and Breckenridge and Telluride and Steamboat and, wow, and Boulder and so forth. But I eventually tried to live in Canada, but come to find out they don't let Americans without working visas in, and that didn't work out. So I was on my way back to – I wanted to move to Wolf Creek, and – I ended up going back through Arizona. And my car broke down, and it just, you kind of have that life moment. You're like, man, you're 24 years old. What are you doing with yourself? And I did at that time end up meeting somebody who ended up being a business partner of mine, who was going to NAU at the time, and spoke really highly of him. And I was just like, you know, maybe it's time for me to go to college. Right? I ended up going to college at age 25 years old. And actually graduated 23. It's amazing when you want to get something done, you can actually get it done. And I actually had a great experience at NAU. The classes were small. If I was not paying attention, the teacher could call me out. So I kind of needed that. And when I was there, I spent about 20 years in Flagstaff altogether. I wrote a business plan on starting a backpacking and kayaking company in the Southwest. But when I graduated college, I'd spent so much time kind of messing around and screwing off that I decided, I was like, well, you need to go get a real job now. And I went to Boulder, Colorado, got a job at Spider Ski Clothing. And I got a job behind a desk and started the warehouse and then worked into accounting. And 6 months in, I was like, oh, this is the worst thing in the world for me. Like sitting at a desk, I hadn't sat anywhere ever. And I love moving around, love being outdoors. And so I decided to move back to Arizona. And that's when I hooked up with my original roommate. We started Four Season Outfitters and Guides and started an outdoor store and a ski rental shop and started running tours, guided tours throughout the Grand Canyon, Yosemite, the Colorado Plateau, Escalante, Grand Staircase, all the way up through Canyonlands. We love the Southwest, like absolutely loved it, and love BLM land and love the national parks. And really just had an amazing experience, and I thought I'd do that the rest of my life. And I had a friend of mine from high school who had started other businesses and asked if I'd work at some of them. And I said, no, you know, I've got a great, cool job and with a really great view of the, you know, seven wonders of the world on a regular basis, one of them at least. Yeah. And, but I said, if you ever had like some like crazy, weird, cool business opportunity, I'd be open to it. And that's when he approached me and was just like, I want to start a whiskey distillery. It's just like Maryland used to have a great whiskey history, great, known for like the world's best rye whiskey. And you should come and start that. And so I was like, wow, that you got my attention with that one. Like,
that's how I got a whiskey distillery.
Yeah, I was like, a whiskey distillery would be like, I'm listening, you know? And like at the end of the day, I really got brought on, clearly not for my knowledge of whiskey making, but really kind of for that entrepreneurial spirit and starting a business and taking a vision and just bringing it to life, which I absolutely love, you know, a group of people in a room who can put that energy together and take that visual and like literally build it out. And so it's been an amazing journey. I started here, moved back in 2013, and we launched the product in 2016, and we're 4 years in, and we've had some tough days, but we've had a lot of really great days. And it's a fun industry. It's a tough industry, but it's a fun industry. You meet people like yourselves and so many other folks. And at the end of the day, I look at it as, you know, before I kind of thought originally, I was like, well, the only thing I know about whiskey is if you drink too much, it's kind of a long day the next day. and it always tastes, but then I started thinking more about it. And I was like, it tastes great around a campfire. It tastes great with friends and that experience. And I really relate this business at the end of the day as providing hospitality and an experience for someone. And that's no different than commercial guiding in the backcountry. People from all walks of life can bond on one single thing. Like we can bond on a trail, we can bond on a river, and you might be a multimillionaire and you might be a school teacher and someone else, you know, and if just, but none of that matters. And we can all bond on one kind of single thing. And then, you know, you want your brand to always provide a great experience and great hospitality. So I look at really at the end of the day, that's kind of my connection between the two is what kind of memories can we leave you with? What kind of experiences can you have? What can you share with friends or people you've never met before, but leave going like, those are a great group of people. And I'd like to get them known better. And like, I think whiskey does that.
Absolutely. I think I love that perspective. That's a great perspective.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, particularly, you know, the part about people and the experiences that you could create. And I think that your creativity and creating experience can only go as far as how good your product is. And so far, your product is fantastic. In fact, I'm anxious to sip our second one.
Are you ready to jump into another bottle? All right. Are you ready to guide us through another taste here?
How was that for a transition?
I was like, man, that guy, you nailed that one.
Smooth as butter, man. All right. So what do we want to do now, Brian?
Jump next to our Double Oak. Double Oak is a beautiful packaging. It's got this great copper and blue label, 96-point rating. We're going to go up quite a bit here in ABV and proof. We're going to go to 96.6 proof. And really interesting about this one is the beautiful color. Like this is like gold, like really dark amber, copper. Like it reminds me of like desert varnish. Like it's like incredible. Like the color in this glass. And what I think is really interesting is we'll take a blend of those two straight ryes that I talked about, the high rye and the low rye, after aging for about 5 years, and then we'll finish in another new American oak barrel that we call wave stave barrel. So this barrel will cut grooves down the inside of the staves, the whole length of the stave, that creates about 23 to 25% more surface area for the whiskey to interact with the wood. And we'll do it for 12 to 18 months inside that barrel. And this barrel though, with those waves, we don't want to do a heavy char and burn those off. We want to do a heavy toast, maybe a char one, but basically finish it in a toasted wave stave barrel. And it's really kind of innovative, really brings on some interesting, unique notes on the nose. You get this kind of bright toasted oakiness, but sweetness and spice. And then on the palate, man, like the mouth is like, it's like got this beautiful baking spice. It's like really sweet notes, like a lot of vanilla and like this interesting citrus and like toasted macaroon. And like anytime in a blind tasting, people are always like, no, there's no way this is a rye. Like it's, we use a little bit more of that low rye mash bill. It's definitely got this, I think, a beautiful blend of baking spices and a little bit of sweetness. And this one pairs incredibly well with the s'mores around a campfire.
There you go. Yeah, what doesn't? So let's before we taste it. So I do, you mentioned the bottle, and I just have to mention, I was showing my wife some of these bottles, and she grades whiskey on how the bottle looks, and she loved this bottle of the Double Oak. So she got a, you got a rating just on the look right off the bat. Yeah. But all right, let's taste this. Smells amazing.
This is going to be my favorite right off the bat. I'm anxious to try the rest of your stuff.
All right, you're calling it already.
I'm calling it favorite. Already.
All right.
And for those people listening who obviously can't see, if you go to our Instagram page, Whiskey Philosophy Podcast, and the pictures that we put on it, it's the one with 96 points on the bottle, which is a big deal, right? And you will see that color that Brian was talking about. And it's a man's rye. And what I mean by that is it looks like you would expect anything in your man cave or your office to look. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, thank you. And,
yeah,
and
very good.
You know, a lot of times bottles can be gimmicky and the whiskey can disappoint, and you say, oh, just marketing those guys. But our bottle is definitely very unique by design. But the reason behind that is studying a lot of the historic Maryland whiskey brands, we saw this really cool whiskey brand called Walter's Rye, who still has a museum here in Maryland. It's a great, beautiful museum in Baltimore. And what people don't realize is to buy all that art, he made all his money selling rye whiskey in the 1800s. And it was a beautiful six-sided bottle, embossing down the side. And it just really kind of inspired us. And then we get our logo, our three-diamond logo from a farm where we get the spring water to proof our whiskey, called Sagamore Farm. And it was founded by the Vanderbilt family in 1925, and they had left us the three diamond logo. And so we kind of took old meets new, you know, kind of tipping our hats to the folks before us, kind of passing the baton, and kind of took a historic bottle and then kind of streamlined it a little bit to modern day. And it's shaped like a diamond, like our logo at the same time. And then from an operation standpoint, it's great on the bottling line because there's no front or back until we hit it with a label. So it's a very unique bottle, but it's fun. It's got this like hand, kind of like this hand glass blown look to it. We like it a lot.
It is. It's a great bottle, and gosh, what a good whiskey. You're Matt again. He has a giant smile on his face. We need to have this on too.
This double rye.
He's loving this, and he's. Matt's mostly a bourbon guy, but he's really digging this, I can tell.
Yeah, no, it really is fantastic. Now, Brian, you were talking earlier about spending 20 years in Arizona, and you were a little bit older when you went back to school. And did you find that going back to school or maybe school for the first time as a 23-year-old, 24-year-old versus an 18-year-old that you had more of a sense of a purpose that what you were trying to do with it?
I did. I mean, I think, again, for me, I'd gotten whatever I needed to get out of my system a little bit. And it's amazing. When you go to school because you want to do, it's like anything. When you finally decide that you want to do this and you're determined, it's amazing how well you actually can do and how easy it comes. It was the right school for me. A lot of my classes, once I got into my major, I had classes that had as few as 5-6 people in them, and then on average, maybe upwards of 24 to 25, 30 people. And so for college now, I'm dating myself, guys. This is a long time ago, so I'm sure they've upped their memberships, but in students, but like it was just right for me, and I went in there and I was like, all right, you're going to do this, make the most of it. And I'm really glad I did, because I do believe as much as I always kind of envisioned owning my own business and always viewed myself as an entrepreneur, whether it's the lemonade stand or cutting grass in my neighborhood or shoveling snow, like I love working. I love working for myself and so forth. There are just some real fundamentals that college gives you. And I'm really glad I did it. And I had a great time. And some days I wish I could do it again.
Yeah. Well, it's a great location. Flagstaff's amazing. Great college. So going back, so you joined Sagamore or found it with your buddy 2013. Guide us through what it's like just to start a whiskey company from the ground up, from nothing. Because obviously it takes a few years before you could even start selling the whiskey. So what did that look like?
Yeah, that's a big question. That's a good question. You know, you clearly have the vision, which our ownership, like there's two main investors, and they had the vision. They really had the vision for this, and thinking like, how could Maryland have such a cool industry and let it go? And so you take that visual and you try to bring it to life. And the first thing you really have to say to yourself is, what do we want to make? How much do we want to make? And then what makes our product unique? And then try and navigate that. And what we realized is we really wanted a full flavor, authentic whiskey. And to do that, we had to own our own distillery and get it up and running. But in the meantime, we also knew it was a bad business plan to spend 4 years building out and designing our distillery, getting up and running, and then 4 years waiting for our whiskey to age. And then year 8, 9 before you collect $1. And we also did want to tell you about how great Maryland was at making rye whiskey. But in the meantime, here's our vodka, which, again, that's a good business model for some. It just wasn't an avenue we wanted to take. So we were fortunate enough to have Larry Ebersold, who's the godfather of rye whiskey, and worked as the master distiller at MGP for 35 years, Seagram's for 41 years. One of the most amazing people I've ever met in my entire life. And he really helped us bring this project to life. And he had the connection still at MGP. So it made sense for us to start contract distilling in the beginning and as our kind of our form of vodka, if you will. So we started at MGP while we built out our distillery. And then this year is a very historic moment for us as we begin to transition into our product. And then eventually, you know, move on from MGP. And we're happy to have worked with MGP. They're good people. They make great whiskey. But we really want to own it all the way through. And I would say there's a lot of exciting times, but there's you can't Amazon Prime whiskey. Like it yeah. takes a long time to get it to age and be just right. Quality is incredibly important to us, and every detail matters. And with that being said, distilleries don't come with instructions. So when we finally got it built and up and running, it was a massive undertaking to get it like fully operational and people trained in a very safe manner. So it has been an incredible whirlwind. When I think about the past 4 years of watching us finally get up and running, finally a distillery coming online, to going from one state to 38 states and 6 countries, to everything from what's your product, to visualizing your product, to your packaging, your brand, your story, who your consumer is. And it's been wild. And some of it, a lot of it, we've done well with, you know, we got a fair amount of it right, but we certainly didn't get all of it right. And you know, we'll go back and we'll tweak a little bit of our sales and a little bit of our marketing and a little bit of our operations and everything in between. But the people you meet along the way is like nothing else. It's been spectacular. And this industry, because it's so capital intensive and it's so hard to get an aged product to market, that no one really feels threatened by the other. So the people that I've met in the beginning, that I introduced myself and said, this is kind of what I'm trying to accomplish, where most businesses, they say, like, have security, remove this person immediately. They were like, why don't we bring you into the lab? Let me bring you into the operations or the fermentation room and tell you about what we're doing. And like, they share everything with you, because it's almost impossible to imitate what other people are doing for so many reasons. So there's nothing to lose, nothing to hide. And they are some of the most genuine people. And maybe because a lot of them are from the South in Kentucky and Tennessee, but like very, the hospitality and the kindness is off the charts. And so that's made it really palatable and fun. And it's a wild journey and we're literally just getting started. So I'm looking forward to the next chapter.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about bringing people in and making them feel like they're part of the process. And I assume that when you mention that, you're talking about investors, of course. And how important is that when you're dealing with investors and capital and working with a product where you might have a master distiller say, well, you know what, guys, it's not quite ready yet, and to gain patience?
That is an interesting one. We're really lucky. We have two amazing investors and owners and they I think what they excel is understanding brand and the importance of having a great brand, but more importantly, understanding of having a great product. And I think they know that it's tough to cut corners. Like there is no, you can't achieve what you want. And what we're doing is we are taking a fairly long putt here, if you will, what we're trying to accomplish. And we try to predict sales 6 years out. They know that we either have too much inventory or too little inventory. But overall, do they see the foundation and the fundamentals of the business is strong? And I think they clearly do with the awards, the accolades, the sales growth that we're experiencing constantly. So I think they're very pleased, but they also are entrepreneurs themselves. So they know that what you set out to do is not always accomplished on day one. As a matter of fact, one of them has, you know, been running a business now that's publicly traded for, I think, about 23 years. And I believe he always refers to it as they're just getting started. So it's not easy. They're incredibly patient, and taking their experience and wisdom is a huge advantage to us that we have the access to that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that probably lends to the region, right, in Maryland. And you've talked several times about the history of the region. How important is it, or is it a mindset to educate people on the history? You said that, you know, it had kind of been lost. And if it's really important, if that's something you guys are trying to do to boost the recognition of what the industry has to offer, how much of a role does social media play into that?
That's huge. I mean, we have a huge list in front of us, right? So we got not only get the vision up and running and then get the distillery up and running, but we're doing rye whiskey, people in the whiskey world definitely know rye whiskey. But overall, you think about it, not a lot of new whiskey drinkers fully understand what rye whiskey is. So there's an educational component there, right? Let's educate you on what rye whiskey is. Or if they've had a rye whiskey before and they said, oh, I had one before and it about burned my mouth off. Well, let me tell you about Maryland style. So there's like, we've taken on every challenge possible. Let's go ahead and tell you what rye whiskey is, which is the smallest set of any whiskey drinker there is. Then let's tell you a little bit about what Maryland rye whiskey is. And people are like, what the hell are you talking about now? Maryland of all places, right? And so like, but it is, it's a gift. Like, I mean, Maryland has a great history of distilling. So it's just one of those things. I mean, we were distilling for 158 years before Kentucky was a state. So, but promote it. Awesome. The digital aspect of things and the technology, thanks to social, makes it all possible, right? It's never been easier to reach people for a more cost-effective way and to train, to educate people, whether it's a Zoom or Teams or a video we put on YouTube or a post, whatever it may be. You would be dead in the water without social media and digital today. And that platform and that technology that's come on is hands down the most cost-effective way for any brand to get up and going.
Absolutely. That's pretty much everything nowadays, I think.
And that's how we found you. So, I mean, it's been good.
I'm not gonna
transition. It's working.
Yeah, it's working.
I'm not going to transition quite as smoothly as Matt. So I just want to jump into another bottle here. What?
Speaking of social media, let's drink.
Yeah, let's drink. So what do we got next, Brian?
Well, let's take things up really a level here. Let's jump into the cask strength, right?
All right, got it right here.
And this was the one that I was most looking forward to before I tried the double oak. So,
The signature is the folks kind of newer want something easy to drink. If you're a seasoned whiskey drinker, maybe it's a little bit more on the breakfast or day drinking whiskey list. Double oak is so unique. You just don't see many double oak rye at all. And then you throw in that toasted wave stave barrel. It's fun. It's unique. It's got a beautiful mouthfeel. But then cask strength, this too, even though there's a lot of cask strength whiskeys out there, this I think you guys are going to find it to be kind of interesting. Usually between 112 and 114 proof. Everything about this product is exactly the same as our signature, but it's just cask strength instead of 83 proof. But clearly the experience is just different. We got the big, bold black label on it because it's just got a lot of black pepper, white pepper, beautiful long finish. But people always walk away from this one going like, wow, like there is an interesting sweetness, like a vanilla, like a dark chocolate, a little bit of brown sugar. And it's dangerously easy to drink for 112, 113 proof. So I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. Yep. And you can dip it.
We're tasting.
Yeah. I like to know, especially when I'm drinking something neat, that I'm drinking something worthwhile. And the second that it hit my tongue, I know that I'm drinking something worthwhile. And what I mean by that is it hits me in the tongue.
It's going to get you drunk. And, is that what you're saying?
beyond that, you know, there are some really light, whiskeys and bourbons out there that are great in their own quality. But if I don't know that I'm drinking it, then it's just not worth my time. And this off the first sip just is.
Yeah, I like the spice of this. I feel I do taste that pepper.
Yeah.
And it's sweet. I mean, you get, there are notes of obviously some sweetness, honey. It's great. Yeah. Like you said, this is too easy to drink.
Well, it's got a little pop with a little bit of sweet, and that's got to be tough to do. Pop, and you talked about, you know, obviously it's cask strength, so it's cask strength. And I imagine that there's a little bit of water there. And I understand that you guys have some particularly good water in your region.
Yeah, you know, we do. And this cask strength, we can add a splash, like a ladle of our spring water from Sagamore Farm. But to only keep it within 1 point of barrel exit proof. And that's just to kind of, it just opens it up. It really does. It makes things drastically different. And I think when people taste it, like, yeah, it's got beautiful flavor. It's got a long finish. You feel it roll off your tongue.
Yeah.
There's no bitterness to it. It's all the way up in your cheekbones. It's got double gold in San Francisco. And so it's one of those, like, it's beautiful and easy to drink, and in my opinion, a way a cask strength should. I've had so many cask strengths that I'm like, I can't get this down, or like, man, don't give me a big cube, give me a bunch of ice cubes. Like, let this thing dilute. And I just think like that blend of those two straight mash bills, a splash of the spring water, kind of open it up, and it makes it so drinkable that it's, whether you like it neat, whether you like a big cube, or a spirit forward cocktail, like this shines. And it's one of those, what, trust me, it still has the same effects as 113 proof, but it drinks so nice. It just really does.
Don't waste this stuff in a cocktail, guys, listeners. It's too tasty, ice or neat. And I mean, usually this proof, something like this, I'm going to wince a little bit. This went down very smooth. So much flavor. So far I've been impressed on just how much flavor we're getting out of these ryes.
Yeah, but I thank you for that. Like, we love the idea of, again, like, I would love full flavorness across the tongue and everything and the complexities there, but I don't want anybody ever turn me going like, man, this thing just really burned up my chest. You know, like it's very palatable.
It is. And for those listening, when you go to try it, if you like it with ice or a little bit of water in it, that's fair. But I just promise that you don't need it because it is good on its own.
Try it neat first.
Try it neat first. Brian, sorry to keep taking you back to our neck of the woods in the Four Corners Southwest area. But earlier you were talking about the guiding and creating an experience and how that's translated into your new domain. Were there any trips with guiding or having people out in the wilderness that stood out to you?
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, you know, like backcountry is one of those things where it is so many things happening in a single trip, right? There's so many highs. And sometimes for a lot of the trips, there can be some lows. It's unfortunate, but you have the elements of the outdoors. There's nothing you can do to control Mother Nature. She'll do what she wants. And these experiences in the backcountry, when you get down there and people have, you've completely removed them from the world and you finally say, no, you have no cell phone, you have no internet, you have no outside communication. You see, we really find out what kind of people they are at the end of the day. And you watch people as they go down there. And as we drive to the trailhead, they're all on their phones. They're trying to get out the last email. They're frantic. They're trying to get all the work done. Yeah. Day one, they still see the wheels spinning of I got to get work done. By day two or three, they realize there's nothing they can do about it. And they're so blown away by the beauty of what surrounds them. They finally come out of their eggshell. And like, it is... it's like spiritual, it's healing, it's necessity, and like people need that. We need to disconnect to reconnect. Like it's like one of those things that just grounds you, and you meet like every walk of life on your trips, and it's fascinating to listen to their stories. They'll educate you, they'll teach you just as much as you'll share, you know, knowledge about the flora, the fauna, and everything in between on a trip, but like to hear about them and where they've been in their life and what got them there. It's fascinating to get to know people. And people are very, very interesting at the end of the day. And but there's nothing more powerful than Mother Earth. And like, she'll move you. I've seen many, many people when we rim out the top of the Grand Canyon, and rightfully so, there's cheers of celebration. There's tears of celebration. There's tears because they at one point didn't think they were going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you tell them hiking down into the Grand Canyon is optional, hiking up is not. Like, it's like going down is optional. Hiking up is not. They don't come with helicopters. They don't send mules. So there's the rim, and whatever length of time it takes us to get there is when we'll get there. And they all want to know when they're going to get there. And it's like, man, it's like everything in life. I can't tell you when you're going to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Yeah,
it just takes time and determination and just let it come to you. Like, let it go, let it go, let it flow, let it come to you. And, you know, and everybody sits there and goes like, I had no idea it'd be this difficult. I'm like, did you see pictures of the Grand Canyon? Do you see any flat spots? Like, there are no flat spots. Like, it's like you're either going straight down or you're coming straight up. But there's like, yeah, there's some switchbacks here and there, which is about as flat as it gets, man. Like, you know, but it's humbling. It's humbling. And just like this business is, it's humbling. It's like, you know, we won World's Best Rye Whiskey in 2019 with our port finish. We've been on the market for 3 years. We're beyond humbled, but it's just like, we're a 3-year-old company. Like, we got a lot of work to do. We, you know, we are by no means, you know, the world's, you know, we had that award, but we're not, you know, we're not, now we're all set. We're the best company out there. Like, we got a lot of work to do. And when you visit our distillery, you'll see on the doors, it says teammates only or teammates welcome or whatever. We don't have a master distiller. We think it takes a team. We think it takes an organization. I think everybody brings value. if we didn't need you, we wouldn't have you. And there's no one that makes it happen. And, you know, in the backcountry, a lot of that's the same way. Like, it's just like, yeah, you have a trip leader, but at the same time, you know, when you look at when like in a paddle boat and you think about, we all got to be synchronized on paddling when we tee up and we come into the tongue of that rapid, whatever it may be, how we angle it, how we set it up. Like maybe the guide set it up at the right angle, but if we all don't synchronize our paddles at the same time and forward, 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 or back on the left or whatever it may be, we got to synchronize it. It's going to take all of us to get through that class 7 rapid or whatever it may be. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's cool. It's fun, you know, and like, it's a unique experience. And it's, again, it's about the people who create it. I work with the best people out there, in my opinion. And, they work really hard. They're incredibly dedicated, as you see that same thing with, you know, people who are incredibly dedicated to try and figure out how to hike from one rim of the Grand Canyon to the other. You can't just show up and do it. It's going to take practice. It's going to take a team. It's going to take a group of people, and it's going to take determination. And that's kind of what it is like every day. Roll up your sleeves and get to work, and you know, we'll figure out when we get there. But that journey is a long ways from here.
Well, speaking of your team, we've been in communication with 3 or 4 of your team members, and it's been great. They've been easy to work with. So, I mean, it speaks volumes for what business you have and what you're running, just to be able to communicate. I mean, it's been great. So I did want to ask, you know, you mentioned you've won some awards. When it's out there, when you finally, you know, after these years of work to put this product out there and you're waiting for reviews, you're waiting to hear what people think about it, how nerve-wracking is that? What was that like?
Yeah, good question.
The beauty of working with Larry Ebersold is, even though he's on your team, he'll be the first one to tell you if something's bad. That's the beauty of kind of that old school generation. And so when he blessed it, I knew that we should feel confident about what we're putting on the market. And he knows his name is attached to it as well. Okay. So he wouldn't do something that he wasn't confident in. You also know you're always going to have some naysayers and people who just want to hate to hate.
Yeah.
But you know, and we know our whiskey isn't for everybody. Like we made a very thoughtful decision to say, I'm going to be a Maryland style rye. And when you have a seasoned whiskey drinker drink our signature rye, they're like, that's really kind of light. And it's like, yep, it is. And then when you have the other 96% of the world try it, they go, wow, that's a really nice whiskey.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things, like, you know, so it's like, I always tell people, where'd you get your start? Jim, Johnny, Jack, like that's all like 80 to 86 proof whiskey. So we want to get you in the door with our signature rye. It's a beautiful, easy drinking, approachable rye. And then hopefully you graduate up through our portfolio. And I don't expect people to love every one of our ryes. And I know our ryes aren't meant for every single person on this earth, but hopefully they appreciate at least one of them and respect it, and so be it. And that's kind of what we gauge our success off of. We make if 3 different ryes. If you loved all 3, we probably did something wrong, because that means all 3 are just, I don't want to say the same, but you know, there should be something that really jumps out at you, whether it's today, whether it's that cast strength or the double oak or the signature, and that's kind of what we do. And it is nerve-wracking, though, because you spent 3, 4, 5 years getting there, you know, and to get there and all of a sudden find out people are like, it's also like, this sucks. Like, that would be really bad. And like, trust me, it went a few times, but Larry helped us provide some confidence along the way. So, and yeah. You know, so you read the occasional review today that's just like, that, you know, is negative. And everybody, God bless America, man. You have every right to have your opinion, and so be it. I think overall our reviews are pretty, means our products are pretty well received, usually is what I'm seeing. But yeah, you know, it's not necessarily for everybody, perhaps.
Well, it's for us.
It is. And the reviews speak for themselves. But when Josh asked that, I thought it was an interesting question. And it turns out you just kind of have nuts of steel, Brian. And you were walking into this knowing what you had in hand. And so We respect that you knew what you had. Speaking
Well, do you ever get to the top of that like class 10 rapid and be like, well, I'm committed now.
Yeah.
Unless you plan on hiking out your 18-foot rap and frame it all. Like, I'm committed now, man.
You can't bail at that point.
No, you can't. So, speaking of which, I just poured our last.
I was going to say, I'm guessing you want to try this last one since you started pouring it already. So
I do.
All right, Brian, we got this last pour. This is Distiller's Select.
Yeah, this is – so we went through our three diamonds, our three core products, if you will, our signature rye, double oak rye, cast strength rye. And then we have this fun series called the Sagamore Reserve. The Sagamore Reserve is a little bit about innovation, R&D, education, like what can we learn, and risk takers and history makers. It's kind of one of those things where it's like rye whiskey is very versatile and we think there's a lot of ways to use it, but we always want our rye whiskey to be a whiskey, if you will, right? And so we've done in the past, we've done one where we took our five-year-old rye whiskey, finished it in barrels that had cognac in them for 30 years and finished in them for 6 months and got a 98-point rating. We did it with our port finish. And that got World's Best Rye Whiskey San Francisco. We did a Calvados finish, which was a product that didn't turn out great, but the ops team said, like, it's a beautiful flavors, but it's got this French tannin oak to it.
Interesting.
It needs another year, but we're going to take it out of the Calvados barrels and put it into freshly dumped rye barrels, and we're going to let it balance out. And they did that, and it turned out to be a gorgeous whiskey. And so it may not always come to life, or it may not come to life when you want it to. But the one you have in front of us is, I admire the team for taking this kind of approach and this bold step. And it's our Manhattan finish, our Distiller Select Manhattan finish. So those who like the occasional classic cocktail like a Manhattan, this is for you. Those who don't, some have still found some joy in it. Some have not. Maybe you save it for a friend. But we want it to always be a rye whiskey. So what did we do? We took our four-year, seven-month-old rye whiskeys, and we finished them in, after sourcing, a cherry brandy barrel, a vermouth barrel, and a bitters barrel. And we found all those different barrels. We put our rye whiskey in them for 1 year, 9 months additionally. So we're over 6 years total, and finished in there. Spent a month in the lab deconstructing all the tasting notes of a Manhattan cocktail, and then reconstructed all that based on the flavors that we had in these finishing barrels and proofed it to 103. So it is a whiskey, but it has hopefully these identities and these connections and these like hints that connect you back to a Manhattan cocktail that might be like a bright cherry, this herbaceousness, but yet this like rye spice, and it should still be a rye. And even though we use some vermouth barrels to finish in, it's still not oversweet. It's not jumping out that ideally you're like, this is a rye whiskey, but what a bunch of interesting flavors going on here.
Yeah. Awesome. We're anxious.
Yeah. And I could smell the Manhattan, just the,
it does smell like Manhattan. Cheers.
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 That does taste like a Manhattan, but it's not as sweet. That is interesting. Sorry, I'm going to take one more sip.
Yeah, I always judge it on the second sip.
Yes. You look like you're pondering, you're deep.
Well, I am. No, I get the brandy, I get the cherry, and it tastes like a less sweet.
Which I don't like sweetness. I don't like mixed drinks because of the sweet. So this is hitting the right spots for me.
Well done. I know that you guys deconstructed it, but you reconstructed it pretty well.
Thank you. I think it was cool. It's a bit of a bold move that they went for, and I'm like, and I think they did really well with it. I really do. We learned along the way that bitters barrels go a long way, so we still have a ton of whiskeys finished in bitters barrels. Yeah. And so, like, you learn a lot along the way, too, but we never feel obligated to have to use all of the whiskey. We just put it together until we like what the flavor and the tasty notes and the approachability of it. And if it means we use all 15 barrels, great. If we only use 10 of the 15, so be it. We don't feel obligated to use all our whiskey. We just feel obligated to make a really high quality drink.
I love that philosophy. That really speaks to us, I think. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. What I was going to say is, obviously you've fostered in an environment where people can come up with creative ideas or something like your Distillers Select would have never come up, but where and who would come up with an idea of deconstructing a Manhattan, and what was the initial thought to the group when that was brought up?
You know, that is a great question. And knowing the humble team that we have, there's probably no one that would actually claim that. They'll probably claim that they work together on it. But I know when they brought it to me, because I'm pretty sure they had side conversations for a long time before saying, well, we should take it to him and see what he thinks. And when they brought it to me, I'll be perfectly honest. They brought it to me and I said, I love how bold you are and I love where you want to go, and I'm not going to get in the way of it. And as much as I trust them and know that I work with some of the greatest people on the face of the earth, I was like, it's okay during innovation to fail. You'll never advance if you don't fail. Mm-hmm. And I had in my head that this one might not work out at all.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I went in my head. I was just like, that's okay. That if this doesn't work, like, I'm just glad that we're taking the strides that we're taking. But they pulled it off. So that from a bottom line, like, you know, from a bottom line business perspective, it worked out much better than I thought. But in my head, I'll be perfectly honest, when they brought it to me, I was like,
yeah,
don't micromanage, don't get in the way, let people go, let creativity happen. Like, you never want to get in the way of that. Never. But deep down inside, I was like, good luck, people.
I say that. I'm thoroughly impressed. Just the fact that would ever come to the table is awesome. We don't want to monopolize your time tonight, but I did have one more question, if Josh doesn't mind, and if you don't mind, Brian.
I got nowhere to be.
Okay. When specifically talking about the rafting. So you finished your last conversation about the guides of saying, you know, you get to the point where there's no turning point. You get on a rapid and nobody's got a choice. You get going. What, as a guide, what kind of sense of ownership did you take over the people that you're with? That had to be a big responsibility.
In the backcountry or at the distillery?
Sorry. Well, I mean, both, right? But specifically as it pertained to having people out in the wild.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is, you know, that's a guide's responsibility to get people, like, you do literally take great pride in making sure you get every single person back safely. And that's not easy. And I don't want to speak for all the guides that ever existed in the backcountry. But I know, like, I worked with some of the greatest people ever when it comes to backcountry guiding. And you want to talk about people who, you know, didn't sleep for nights on end to stay up with someone to make sure they ended up feeling better. Did whatever it took to get, whether it was carrying their own backpack plus their backpack to help them get to where they needed to be. You know, it's just about that journey and everything in between, and taking great pride and saying, like, we're going to get you home safely. And what people, I think, don't realize, it's hard to envision unless you live and breathe it every single day, that it's not a controlled environment. And so when you go to Disney World, yes, everything is kind of safe and controlled, so you don't have to worry about personal judgment, or all these things are just set up to be like safe for you. When you make the choice to say, I'm going to go into the backcountry, and I'm going to go into the backcountry for 6, 7, 8, 10 days, you're going to come out a changed person one way or another. And that's because you've made a decision to, and not everybody's used to this, like, but you've made a decision to go like into the wilderness and not have certain things. Like people talk about like, well, I'm used to hot. I live in Chicago. Well, have you been to the bottom of the Grand Canyon where, you know, it's 113 degrees during the day and at night it cools down to 101.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like, and there is no air conditioning for the next 7 days.
Yeah.
And like, and everything that you're going to eat has to go on your back and be carried in or out. So ideally you eat it all, but we also have enough to keep you well fed. You're going to burn 1,000 calories an hour walking up that hill, 500 calories an hour coming down that hill. Like, all these things that you put in into planning. And that's what everything I think comes down to when it's like life, business, and experiences. If you want it to go well, it is about the plan and the people that put the plan together and making sure that every route is mapped out, everything is considered, everything has been studied, and you give yourself the best shot humanly possible. So like when you go in that backcountry, you know that route inside and out, season related, weather coming, what can you experience along the way that you can't control? What are my options to go in there and improvise and provide a way out? And whiskey at the end of the day is the same way. Like we're going to put something into a barrel and we're going to go into it and we don't know how we're going to come out of this. And if it doesn't come out like what you want, what are we going to improvise? How are we going to finish? What are we going to do? You leave it aging longer. But how do we make sure we just basically provide people a great experience? And then those in the backcountry, ideally a very safe, great experience. And that's and guides, like, and it sounds like you guys have some insight to it yourselves. Like, that's not easy, man. The backcountry brings elements and that no one can expect at certain times. And whether it's flash floods or snow unexpectedly, I've been in trips where the bottom of the Grand Canyon was 108 Fahrenheit and I came out in a snowstorm. You just don't know what it'll bring, but are you prepared? And have you thought about it? And is it considered? And if you do all those, you should be good.
That's awesome, Brian. So I think this has been a dream conversation for Matt and I, because we get to talk about whiskey and outdoor adventures, which is basically two of our favorite things. So
yeah,
I think we could talk about this all night. I do, before we cut out, I do have one more question for you. So taking such a hard pivot from being in the Grand Canyon, being outdoors, which you clearly love nature, you love being outdoors. What do you do now just to escape and get back to nature?
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate. I've got a beautiful family. I got a great wife. But I met, and I remember like the first, like our first date was hiking and we've been on a bunch of hikes. And I remember like going out to my favorite place in Arizona, the White Mountains of AZ out on the Apache Sitka Raves National Forest and the Apache Reservation. And like, I remember like getting out there in the pouring rain. We got to our camp finally, my favorite place on earth, and it's just pouring rain. And watching my wife stand there going, how can I help set up camp? And like, I was just like, all right. She wasn't my wife at the time. I was like, you're going to be my wife. Like, you know, just like, and then like, and then now we fortunately have two great boys who absolutely live for being outdoors and live for fishing and so forth. So my other passion is fly fishing. I spent a lot of time fly fishing in the backcountry of Arizona and the Grand Canyon and Utah and California and definitely New Mexico and Colorado. And my boys luckily love to fish and love to fly fish. And so for me, it's anything to be outdoors. There is just something that we have a dog that makes me, we have to walk him. His name's Char, like a whiskey barrel. And nice. And like, there's just when everything else fails, if I can just go outside and have sun beat down on me and I can move and I can get the blood flowing, that always works. But if I can be doing it outside with my boys or my wife and fishing, I'm really in a good spot.
Awesome, man. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. And we appreciate that. And we appreciate your background. And we sincerely, sincerely thank you for your generosity, not only with your product, which was fantastic. And we're not just saying that because we're on the phone with you. I just don't believe in doing that. But especially with the time that you spent with us tonight, you're a fascinating guy, and we just can't thank you enough.
Absolutely.
Guys, again, like we are a small brand based out of Baltimore, Maryland, that a lot of people have never heard of us. And so the opportunity to come onto your show and to share our story, I can't thank you enough for the opportunity. I hope I delivered what you guys want. And I always like, I hope I didn't say anything that embarrassed our team, but like, thank you again for the opportunity. And like for a little brand like ours, it's a handshake brand to get out there that, you know, this day in COVID, this is the best way we can do it. So thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you to your listeners who tuned in and listened to this and considered us. And hopefully you'll go out and get a bottle of Sagamore and enjoy it responsibly.
Absolutely, brother. And thanks again. Amazing interview. Yeah, you did everybody proud, including us and your team. And we look forward to having you on again sometime.
That'd be great, man. We should do it the next time from the backcountry.
Yeah, let's do it. No, we're down for that. All right, Brian. Cheers. Have a good one.